see when we got involved in it again. 90 years ago.
This is Dale Cunningham, and Neil's telling us about Massey Creek lease.
Around about 1960, when I was about 19, Dad acquired the lease back from the O'Loughlin family. The lease originally was taken up by our Uncle Alec back in the 1930s. In them days it was only an occupation license, as they called them. They were a year-to-year lease that had to be renewed every year. And after, I don't know exactly how many years, old Pat O'Loughlin acquired the lease off Alec and had cattle there, and then his son Mick run cattle there, Mick and Pat and young Paddy, and until about 1960, when they decided they were finished with the piece of country. Old Pat had died and left it to young Pat, who was a cane farmer at Finch Hatton, and Dad bought the lease then back off Pat, and we started running cattle there in about 1960. Back in them days, the only way in or out of the place was on a horse, a pack horse, a little split bag behind your saddle or whatever. It was an old hut down on a piece of no man's land down on Massey Creek, and we used to go to there. We built a lap yard up the creek on the first sand flat, and we used to muster to there for starters and bring any clean skin cattle that we caught and taught to drive and what have you. We would drive them home, bring them back to Youngla. We also had a lease on the Diggins block at Broken River, or between Broken River and Crediton. We used to bring cattle home and put them there. We had short on cattle in the early days, and they had to be dipped every 6 weeks or die from the ticks, so it was a constant job of going there and mustering. Every 6 weeks or so, we'd spend a week there riding around, picking up cattle, branding calves, dipping cattle. All had to be done hand spray. Then as time went on, and we put a bit of a track down in onto Plar Creek that you could get in and out with a Land Rover. We built a bit of a hut there, and another yard and what have you, and a few little paddocks, a horse paddock and all, which was different to before that. When we went there, you had to hobble your horses and just hobble them out on the creek and then pick them up the next morning when you wanted to muster, and take them all to the creeks and give them a drink, and then hobble the ones you weren't going to use for the day and leave them out hobbled to feed. But anyway, when we got a track in there and made things a little bit easier. But a lot of the fencing we done was done off pack horses. You'd put two bundles of star pickets in in the saddlebags on the pack horse with the ends of the pickets up over behind the horse's ears and tie them together and strap them into the bags and cart them to where you wanted. It was a pretty painstaking thing. Getting 20 posts, maybe 6 miles down the creek or up the creek, wherever you might have been going. And your barbed wire, you had to break your coils in half, put half a coil on each side to cart them to where you wanted them. That was a job on its own. And mustering was a constant thing. We were sawmilling at the same time, but we just had to, you'd just go away from the sawmilling and go mustering when you had to do it. If you didn't do it, the cattle died from the ticks. And then as time went on, we introduced Brahman bulls into the herd. And once you got a content of Brahman blood in your cattle, you didn't have to dip as often, and so you didn't work the cattle as much. And then steadily the cattle get a bit towier as you go and what have you. And when you went there then, it was a bit different. The old days when you was mustering every 6 weeks, you had to ride a bit harder. But anyway, you still got your cattle and what have you. And them days, back in the early days, there was no lantana on the creeks and very little rubbish. Those years went on, and with our so-called cool burn policy by the government, the no burn policy, the lantana completely gone away.
About what year did you introduce the Brahmins?
Oh, probably 67 or something like that, 1967. Dad used to go to Rocky and buy bulls off the Ray family and other people that bred cattle, bred Brahmin bulls. And at the same time, we introduced Brahmin bulls into the Diggins block as well. Used to breed some really nice steers, sell store steers mainly. Them days, the agents would come to the yard with a buyer and you'd sold most of your cattle on the property. And then they would send a truck, pick them up and take them away if they bought them.
Could you tell us about building the plunge dip over at Massey Creek? How you went about doing that? Because there was no access to get a truck in there or anything for cement?
Well, them days you done everything by hand.
And what year was it?
I'll have to ask Del that. She'd remember better than me. She knows how old Robert was when we was there. So what year was that?
He was two, because I was worried about him going over there with you for about 5 days and not having any milk because there was no fridges over there. 1973.
So in 1973 we must have decided to dig a plunge or put in a plunge dip. Eric Tillman come over and Mary and camped in the hut there for a week, and Eric dug the hole by hand. There was, in the bottom of the hole, there was big granite boulders. But luckily we had the John Deere skid of them days with a winch on and used to back over to the edge of the dip hole and put a wire sling around the boulders and lift them out with the winch on the skidder and take them out the road, roll them back down the creek where they really belonged. And for sand, I made a track across the creek and up to the bottom of what we used to call our bathtub. Nice big swimming hole, and there was a big patch of sand on the other side of the creek beside it. Made a track around over to there and pushed up a bit of a ramp of sand and used to back the Land Rover into it and push it full with the blade on the skidder and cart it over to the dip site, shovel it out by hand. And then we come over here to Youngler, and there was about a 500 gallon corrugated iron tank that had been concreted. It used to belong to old Case Brogo from the Youngler Chalet. He used to have some milking cows and had a little bit of a dairy, and he had this tank for a water tank in his dairy, but he'd finished with it and long gone. And anyway, we acquired it off old Kay and took it over there for a water tank so we'd have water when we went to build our dip. Carted our cement over there in the back of the old Land Rover and a hand cement mixer, and carted a heap of timber over there to box the dip with, all that sort of thing. And then we poured the concrete, mixed the concrete by hand and poured it by hand, rammed it by hand and everything else. Georgie Pierce was working with us at the time. We started pouring the concrete one morning and poured it up the ground level the first day. Poured the floor and up the ground level the first day, then finished off the next day. Had it full of water within 2 days, and the dip never leaked. It was quite a good dip for quite a few years. What year did Russell get killed, do you remember?
78.
So it must have been in the 80s we had a wet year, and a spring broke out on the top side of the dip and pushed the top side wall in and totally wrecked it. But anyway, when we had the dip working, it made things a lot easier to dip your cattle. You got them a lot cleaner and kept them cleaner a lot easier. And since then, like when we used to go to muster, there was always heaps of young fellas that used to just die to get over there and gallop around and catch a scrub and Mickey and what have you. And we always had plenty of extra hands.
Tell us about catching the scrubber Mickeys. How did you do that?
You'd be riding around, you'd have a mile of quiet cattle with you for coaches, a couple of dogs each, and you'd have a couple of men riding in the lead, and if you struck cattle, quiet cattle, well, you'd sneeze the men in the lead, we'd get around them and block them up and put them back into the mob. Sometimes they'd have scrubber Mickeys and what have you with them that wouldn't block up, and they'd bolt for the ridges, so one fella and a couple of dogs would go with them and let the old dogs give them a bit of a liven up and give them a good chase until they started to knock up a bit, and then you'd grab them by the tail and throw them over on their side, grab them by the top side hind leg and hold them down and pull a strap off from round your waist and put a strap on both their hind legs, and then you'd go back and meet up with the other men, with your mob of coachy cattle, as we used to call them, and bring them up to where the one was you'd throw him, cut his horns off and get the coaches around him, then you'd let him up. And a lot of times they'd have a couple of bolts, but the dogs would put them back in the mob, and then you'd just hold them until you could ride around the mob, and if they were looking at you and you rode towards them, they'd turn around and go back into the mob. And by doing that, you taught them to drive with your quiet cattle. The only way to get any of them home from in that country was to drive them home. So if you was there, you'd muster there for a week or so, and then you would say, well, righto, we're going to head for home tomorrow. Well, a couple of days before that, you would have drafted off the ones you were going to take home and turned the other cattle out, and then you would tail those cattle then for a couple of days and water them and get them driving as well as you could. And then on your day to go home, you'd leave the yard and the hut at daylight and drove them up the mountain to a yard we had up on the top where we could get a truck to. And things haven't changed a lot from that since then, other than the fact that now we've got a lot more tracks in the country. We've got four-wheel drive utes that will carry a bull up a pretty steep hill out of some pretty rough country, and we got into the darting scene for quite a while, and we used to just drive around and dart bulls, dope them, then tie them up to a tree, and then come back in a vehicle with a float and what have you on, or sometimes we'd be in the vehicle with the float on. And we'd put them in the back of the ute and bring them home that way. Anyway, the darting scene sort of slowed down because of druggies making of amphetamines out of the drug we used to use, so they stopped us from buying it. So we had to go back to the old way of doing it. Either catch them or trap them. And in the later years we've had two or three pretty good traps, and we do a fair bit of trapping. Feed cattle molasses in the traps where they go in a trap, trap in spear, and then go out of it, out what we call a trap out spear. And when you decide to muster the cattle or trap them in, you just close the trap out and go back the next day, and the yard will be, or the tail and paddocks will be full of cattle, and you sort them out from there. Yard them up and take the ones away you want to take, and turn the others out again. All the years that we mustered cattle and what have you in there, everything was done on horseback. We've had, over the years, we've had some pretty good horses. We've had, used to end up with horses that people would be having problems with. Give them a couple of weeks in Massey Creek and they wouldn't have a problem left in them. Great place to take the gas out of a horse with a bit of a bit of bad vice. All the time we were there and throwing mickeys and everything else, we didn't have many injuries. Del's brother one time got a bit of a poke in the thigh because he rode up beside a pretty horny sort of a mickey, and he really didn't want to be that close, but the old horse got in on the mickey and he got up beside it, and then mickey threw its head. Actually, it wasn't trying to poke him or anything, it threw its head and poked him in the thigh. But them days he was cutting cane. I think he had to have a couple of days off cutting or something like that. It went a bit septic on him, but otherwise we never ever had many real bad injuries. I remember another time there was a bull used to run on the creek near the junction of Pla Creek and Massey Creek. He'd been there for a while, and we'd sort of rode round him and thought one of these days, we weren't riding around him because we didn't want to do anything with him, but he was just used to dodge us off into the creek. And anyway, one day we picked him up out on the flat and he went for the creek, and I thought, oh, I might be able to bend this fella today. And anyway, I got a bit too close to him and he poked me old horse in the shoulder. So I had to get him out the road, and the old horse went lame. It wasn't a real bad poke, but it was probably 6 inches into the muscle. We poked along and got the cattle up to the yard and yarded them up, and I said to Dad, I said, I'm going to catch another horse and go back down there with a 3-0 and shoot that bull. Oh, he said, you'd be lucky to find him. I said, well, I'm going for a look anyway. And anyway, I rode back down and bloody followed a few tracks and reckoned he'd gone down across the junction and out the other side of Massey Creek. And I rode down across the creek and just coming out the other side, and he was about 70 or 80 metres away. And as soon as he seen me and the horse, he must have thought, oh, well, I'll have another go and I'll poke another horse. And he come jogging straight up to me. And as he was coming, I just stepped off the horse and stood beside a tree with the old 3-0. And when I reckon I had him close enough, I took all the bloody poke the horse out of him. As the kids grew up, they decided they'd like to go mustering over there with us too. And they used to come, and the worst thing about it was making sure they kept out of the road of the bulls. And they learnt fast that if it looked like a bull was going to chase you, the only place to go was up the hill, and up the hill you went. It didn't matter how steep it was, the steeper it was the better, because the bull wouldn't chase you up there too much. But if you went downhill, the old bulls could go like a mail train, and 9 times out of 10 they had a great chance of catching you downhill. But anyway, in the early 80s we were over there mustering. We had quite a crew that time. Graham Ware was there with us, and I think Gary might have been there, Laurie Hansen, myself, and there'd been a bit of a mob of bullocks running there, and they'd been dodging, and young John was there, and anyway, there was some bullocks had been running there, and that we had been dodging us a bit, and we knew they were there, this muster, so we had a mob of cattle over on Massey, on the eastern side of Massey, up above the junction, and we left two or three blokes there holding them, and Laurie Hansen and young John, was only about 8 or 9, and myself, we rode down across the junction and up Massey, the Dick's Tableland side anyway, and we'd put the old block fence up a month or two earlier and trapped the bullocks down on that side of it. And we rode up the creek. We reckoned they'd be there somewhere, and anyway, we spotted them, and they poked along and went up the creek and went up onto the fence and pulled up, which was pretty lucky. And we just poked around, and anyway, I said to Laurie, I said, if these bullocks decide to go, I said, I'll go with them. And not thinking about John, I thought, oh, well, Laurie will poke along and bring John along with him. The bullocks went, and I went with them. Down across Massey, I got on the right side of them and I took them down and put them into the mob of cattle that we had locked up waiting for them. And that was all right. And anyway, about 10 minutes or 15 minutes later, Laurie come riding along, and He's on his own. And I said, oh, where's John? Oh, he said, I don't know. He said, bloody nice. I must have go back looking for him. And anyway, I rode back and had a bit of a look and went back to where we left him. Couldn't find a bloody sign of him. So went back down and we all had a discussion and decided we'd have to let the cattle go and go looking for John. We rode around there for quite a while and couldn't pick up any tracks or not a sign of him. And he'd been riding a good old mare of mine. I wanted him to ride his old pony that he used to ride, and he didn't want to ride him. He reckoned he was too dopey, too slow. He'd been riding him, he'd have never got bloody lost. The horse would have bloody brought him home. But anyway, it got deep, it was pretty close to dark, and it got dark, and we're riding up the creek, and it was reasonably moonlight. Come to a big patch of rubbish, and we're riding along, and the horse I was riding, she was a good mare to ride in the dark too, and she, the old ears pricked, and she sort of balked a bit. And I said to the fellas with me, I said, well, I don't know what it is, and it might be a bloody big old scrub bull standing in this patch of rubbish. And I went, oi! And the voice come out of the dark, is that you, Dad? We found John. John was bloody, he must have rode around till he couldn't ride anymore, and he tied the old mare up to a tree and pulled the saddle off, and he was fast asleep, virtually underneath the mare. Lucky she was a good quiet old thing. And anyway, we got him back on the horse and headed home, got back to the hut about probably 9:30 or something like that. But those bullocks, we never ever picked them up in a mob again. Over the years we picked them up one at a time here and there, but it was one of them things. But that's what cattle are like in that country. Little bullocks or stags, they'll get together and run together after they get to a certain age. They just leave the old cows and go and run on their own. And it makes them a lot harder to do anything else when they get to that age. That's why the only bullocks that ever get to be there are ones that we've missed. You miss over the years, you always miss a few. And of course, back in them days, every night was a bath in the cold old creek, and never used to worry about it too much those days, but nowadays, everybody likes to light the fire up and get a bit of a hot shower going. Too many mod cons. Even when we first started muskering over in that country, there's only been me and Dad and the brother. Have to pick cattle like we pick cattle up. If you got towy cattle, there was no way you could pull up and have lunch, and a couple of blokes go and have lunch and one bloke hold the cow. That wasn't on. Three of you were full on most of the time, so there was lots of lunches. Either get the sandwich on the back of the horse while you were sitting around the cattle, or you just didn't have any. There were other times I know you'd go to muster and you'd ride out to, you'd spot them on the cattle and you'd think, it's only 10 o'clock. I think before we do anything, we'll eat our lunch and then go and muster the cattle. At least that way you had something in your belly, because a lot of times you wouldn't get home till dark or get back. When I say home was only the camp on the creek virtually. And that would be pretty well dark. A lot of the cooking them days was done in the old camp oven. You'd put a roast or something on it, in it early in the morning before you left the camp. Yes, had it worked out. You didn't need too much heat. It was going to be there all day, just enough to keep it, to give it a bit of a cook for starters, and then the heat of the camp oven would cook the rest. And you'd come home at 6 or 7 o'clock, and all you'd have to do was get your meat out and throw a few spuds in, and in 3/4 of an hour you was eating a roast meal. It all used to taste awfully good. I don't know whether it was as good as the taste of them days, but when you're hungry, tucker always tastes good.
And I know that when our kids used to go over there, they learnt to eat stew. They wouldn't eat stew at home, but they'd eat it at Massey Creek. I think they liked Dad's cooking better.
That was only because I used to make me stews nice and thick. You could stand a spoon in them and they wouldn't fall over. That's the only way to eat a stew. I can't stand the runny ones. And the other thing was, I think they were damn hungry when they got fed. That's what made them like my cooking. Yeah, it used to be pretty good them days. I'd go over there riding around and the three kids would go with me. It was after the, would have been in the 80s through to the 90s. They all learnt to ride a horse fairly well and get around the cow. Remember one time myself and the three kids, Lee and Robert and John, we were riding around just poking about any cattle we see, and we'd just block them up and sort of sit with them, and I'd give Lee an old black pony I had, I used to call Blackjack. He was out of a pony mare that Billy Johnson had. I think she might have been come from old Jimmy Peebles originally, and she had a foal by a horse from Tarrawoola, and he wasn't a very flash looking horse, but he was a hell of a good horse. And I'd rode him for years, and he was getting pretty old, and Lee used to ride him. But anyway, one day we were there and we were poking around, there was a mob of cattle on the big sand flat up Massey, and sort of they started to move off a bit, and I was just jogging around to block them. And anyway, an old bull come out the mob and headed for the creek, and this old horse that Lee was riding, he was going too, and it'd give me a hell of a fright. I thought that the old horse was going to take her down and get her into trouble, but anyway, she managed to get a bit of a hold on one rein and pulled him in a circle and pulled him away, which was a good thing. But the old horse, he was going. He reckoned that if it was get down there and block him, he shouldn't have been running away. But they used to enjoy that sort of thing too, and they still do if they get a chance to go. Robert gives me a fair sort of a hand still these days. He's always there when I'm ready to do something. And Noel, the fellow that married Lee, Noel Strack, he comes too when a bloke needs a hand, and he's a pretty good hand as well. Plus, there's always a couple of others. The neighbour Troy comes and goes for a ride with us, and the Stanick boys, they've been going over with us for years, and I think they're a bit sorry that I've slowed down a bit in my head, buddy, as I got older and we don't go as often as we should, but we do a lot more trapping now than we used to them days. And of course, back in the early days, we started off with a few hanging dog types and then went to the blue cattle dogs, which were really good dogs. Wasn't many cattle they wouldn't bring back. And then we graduated into the Collie Cattle Cross, and they've been really good dogs to us over the last 25 odd years. I've still got a fair team of them, a couple of older ones and a couple of young ones that are working well, and not a pup coming on. You always got to have one coming on in case an old one dies on you or something happens. We've had lots of different things have happened over there. We've had heaps of different types of people been and camped over in the hut at different times. I remember when Dad wasn't real good. He was in the base hospital, and he got to know a Dr. Field actually, which was he was a relation of the people that owned Fields and Co. in Mackay. He used to own half the town one time. He was either a grandson or something to one of those fellas, and Dad got to know him a bit, and he always wanted to go over to Massey Creek and have a look at the place. And anyway, him and Dad used to talk a bit, and he got to know there was a hut there and what have you. And one day he said to Dad, he said, there's a few of us that'd like to go over for a weekend. How would we go about it? Dad told me about it, and I said, if they want to come up, if they're coming up, say, on a Friday afternoon or something, I said, I'll take them down and drop them off at the hut. I'll go down Sunday afternoon and bring them back out again. And anyway, there were about 8 or 10 of them, a couple of doctors and a heap of nurses and a few more. And anyway, they got down, I dropped them down there before dark and got a bit of a fire going for them or what have you, and showed them how to light the larrikin lamps. Then I headed back over to home, come back to Youngler. And when I got back over there on the Sunday, they were telling me some of their stories about what went on over the weekend. They said after I left on the Friday afternoon, they all had a few beers and a few wines and whatever else, and had a feed, and decided they'd into the hut and go to bed. And anyway, it was a real moonlight night. And they got into the hut and got themselves all organised and blew the hurricane lamps out, and they're laying there looking up, and one of them said, "Hey, did you notice whether there was a roof on this hut or not?" He said, "Oh, I reckon I can see all the stars." And anyway, one of the others said, "Oh, no, definitely was a roof on the hut. But yeah, it looks like stars." The next thing, one of them's out with a broom poking the roof to see if it to see if it had a roof on. And they, after a while, they worked out that the stars they could see were only the nail holes from the last roof that a roof and iron had been on, and they're looking at the moon through the holes in the roof. Yeah, and about halfway through the night, a couple of old possums started singing out. They'd never heard a possum sing out in the middle of the night. They make a bit of a funny noise, and blooming, they go, and if you get a couple of them going, it sounds like there's a bit of a war on. And that frightened bloody hell out of them. They didn't know what it was, but anyway, they found out when I got back down, and I said, "Oh, that would only been a couple of old possums having a bit of a yarn to one another." Well, lots of times we've been over there and it's coming in rain, but only a couple of times we had to walk home. Most times we had enough time to stay there for another day. You get a storm and sometimes you can't get out of there the next day, but if you leave it till after lunch and you don't get another early storm, well, you can get home that day. Sometimes you might have to wait 2 days, but not very often that we've had to walk out. I remember one time we went over though, and it was stormy weather, and we took an extra vehicle with us and left it up on the top before you drop down. It's only about a K and a half from there down on the creek, Dell and the kids, and a couple of blokes I had working for me, myself, went down there and done a bit of fishing on the creek, and anyway, it came in a storm, so we couldn't drive home. And I said, "Well, don't worry about them going tomorrow." No, we gotta be home. This is women for you.
I have to work.
Anyway, she insisted she had to be home, so it had to work. Work would have waited. Anyway, so we walked home, and I think if ever she gets stuck there again, she'll stay for the extra day and come home in the car.
I'll die there rather than walk home.
It's not a very good walk unless you're pretty fit. Not that it's that far, but it's about, on the altimeter, I think it's around about a 600-foot climb in a kilometre and a half, which is fairly steep going most of the way. Days and nowhere a four-wheel drive vehicle will go. Them old Land Rovers used to be, they really revolutionised driving around that sort of country, driving around the bush. And of course the later model ones running out of there and with suspensions that make you feel like you're driving on the bitumen half the time. Another time we were over there doing a bit of fencing, and it was after the brother had got killed, and young Owen had gone to Sydney's training with the Manly Sea Eagles for football. And anyway, he come home he must have been on a bit of time off, a bit of a holiday, and he come home, and we were over there fencing in the old hut up across to the Younger Station boundary, and it's pretty steep country. Everything virtually had to be carried by hand, and the star pickets carried by hand, driven by hand, and the wire blowing. You had to pull it down, pull it out by hand, and we were pulling it up the hill, which was fairly steep. And anyway, we're working away there one day, and Owen was working with us. He was in full football training. And after a couple of hours, he said, "Oh, bugger." He said, "You old buggers are still pulling the wire up the hill." He said, they ought to bring these football players up here to do their bloody training. And he said, they might get fit, proper fit. Over the years, we've had different fellas that used to come over with us, and they'd stay at the hut some of the time and do the cooking for us. And Gregory Burgess was one of them. And he wasn't a bad cook either, but anyway, he had a feed ready for us one evening when we got home. Uncle Bill was with us that time too, and anyway, walked in. Bill said to Greg, "What's for tea?" Oh, Greg said, "Curried meatballs with a bit of chilli." "I won't be having any," he said. "I don't eat chilli or curry." And Greg said to him, "Oh, well, by the looks here," he said, "one missing out on one feed won't hurt." And Billy just looked at him and half grinned. And anyway, he didn't eat any of Greg's lemon curry chili meatballs, but everybody else did. They were pretty good chewing. And but then we've had others. Dave White used to go with us a fair bit too. And Dave was cooking some fish one night, but he forgot that when you're cooking on a wood fire, you've got to keep your fire going a bit to keep your fat hot. And we ended up with a few half raw fish, but other than that, he wasn't a bad cook either. But he used to muster with us a bit. He worked with me for a while too. Dave, he wasn't too bad.